You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 24th of May 2022 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today I want to continue looking at the sort of thing that they are teaching to children in nursery school. And this follows on from the article we were discussing yesterday, which spoke about a Maoist consulting firm which focuses on anti-whiteness, and they've been called upon to help run nursery diversity training. A report by British newspaper The Telegraph has found that a number of British local authorities hired a firm which focuses on the issues of whiteness and decolonising the mindset of very young children to run diversity training for nursery staff. So they're now not just talking about decolonizing university courses and removing white people from that. They're now talking about doing this in nursery school. And you have to bear in mind that the whole idea of education and schooling, it's a European idea. And all the people that developed the materials for teaching young children have been white. So if you remove everything white from the teaching materials, you really aren't going to have very much left. Now, this is being spearheaded by somebody called the Black Nursery Manager. That's actually what her organization is called. And her qualifications to do this are that she was a primary school teacher and she was given an award by the school, and the school had an overrepresentation of non-whites in it. So she thinks that that qualifies her to be an expert in teaching white children how to be anti-racist, which is basically teaching them all about how horrible whiteness is, which they actually refer to as being violent. And remember, this is three-year-old children, and decolonizing the mindset of these three-year-old children. The Black Nursery Manager, a firm described as providing very Maoist training by one critic, was hired to do the courses by officials, despite the fact that the firm's head, Liz Pemberton, publicly stated online that she hates the government and believes it to be an agent of white supremacy. And remember, these are essentially councils, which are a form of government, and yet they are hiring this woman who hates the government and believes them all to be white supremacists. I mean, I don't really quite understand how you can look at Boris Johnson's cabinet and claim that they are white supremacists. I mean, you've got Richie Sunak there, you've got Priti Patel, you've got Jonathan Van Tam. I mean, I would say probably at least half of Boris Johnson's cabinet are non-white, and yet apparently they are promoting white supremacy. And I guess what she means by white supremacy is just civilization, the way that civilization has been created and set up. It was created by white people, so it is going to reflect white values. It's not going to reflect the ideology and the values of other peoples. And the reason why it is set up the way that it is because that's the way that it works best. If you have values, for instance, of not being so hot on timekeeping, then you're going to have problems with running factories and running work because people are not going to be turning up on time. And there are cultures in the world that don't place a lot of value on timekeeping. And even that is now looked upon as white supremacy. just to be keeping time, just to be having a standard for spelling and a standard for grammar is now looked upon as being white supremacy, because there are cultures in the world that spell things differently. And I mean, we even have that in Wales. You'll see different spellings for things. It's not that it's white supremacy. It's just trying to standardise things. According to the Telegraph's report, at least four public sector authorities headed up by officials from the United Kingdom's leftist Labour Party have employed the firm, which a former education minister has since branded as brainless nonsense and deeply sinister. I mean, she's just basically wanting to get hold of white children and tell them how wicked and evil they are, and that they should be doing everything they could to, or everything they can rather, to improve the prospects of non-white children instead of doing their best to improve the prospects for themselves. The organisation's website describes it as offering a number of childhood education related services, ranging from 90-minute presentations to a 3-session course focusing on anti-racist practice and inclusive play for children under the age of 5, with the firm's head reportedly denouncing how early the violence of whiteness starts in little children. So she thinks just the very fact that people are actually white is associated with violence. Just being white in itself is violent to her. She finds white people offensive. She thinks that white people should be bending over backwards to do everything they can for non-whites. I mean, this sort of ideology really doesn't help in a multicultural environment, does it? When you have one group talking about how wicked and evil the other group is, it's just not going to be helpful, is it? I mean, what she really should be doing is concentrating on black children and teaching black children to do their best for the black community and to be the best representatives of their community they can be, rather than trying to tell members of other communities how they should be behaving. I would have thought it would be better for her to concentrate on her own community, which is what we do as nationalists. We try to concentrate on our own community and improve the standards of that, rather than complaining about the standards of other communities. This is something that I think often gets mistaken, in fact. People think that nationalists are complaining about what other communities are doing, when we have no right to do that. We can only really try to adjust the behaviour of our own group. And these other communities, they wouldn't even be in our country if it wasn't for us changing our immigration policy, if it wasn't for our own government doing that. That's what needs to change. We can't expect other communities to completely change their culture and change their ways of doing things. I mean, that's what the government expects. The government expects people from cultures that are extremely different to European culture to completely change their way of life and change their way of doing things and to behave like good little European liberals. And they're not European liberals. They have a completely different culture and a completely different way of doing things. And this is why we end up with these conflicts that arise within multicultural societies. Some of these courses can range in price from £45 and £85 per attendee, according to the Telegraph, with the organisation's website claiming that a minimum of 10 people must attend for an organisation to book the 3-session course to do with inclusive play. So she gets £850 an hour, I guess, for that, if it's a one session and it's £45 to £85 per attendee and 10 people have to take part. So she's making a lot of money out of basically telling white people how evil and wicked they are. The false idea that there is an imminent crisis in race relations and integration in the United Kingdom is being used as a mandate to wave in ideological indoctrination under the universal guise of anti-racism training and education, said former teacher and education researcher Dr. Alka Segal Cuthbert, who the British publication notes as criticising the firm's training as very Maoist. So what she's saying there is that people are complaining that racism is at its very worst in Britain, and there's all these problems between the different races, and it's all caused by white people. And what they mean by anti-racism is just blaming white people for all the problems in society that these other minorities encounter. News of the United Kingdom's education system being filled with ideological activism has become par for the course in recent years, with transgenderism and climate alarmism in British schools repeatedly gaining attention in both the national and international media. And this follows on from America. I mean, all you really have to do is look at what's happening in America's schools to see what's going to be happening in British schools. And this is such a bizarre thing. I know that in the 50s and the 60s, people in Britain were saying, well, why are we repeating the mistakes that America made? Why are we turning our country multicultural when we can see all the conflicts that have arisen in America? Because America is multicultural. America really didn't have much choice in the matter because they had employed black slaves and they had imported black slaves. So they had a black population there. So they were going to be multicultural. But in Britain, we didn't have a black population here. Britain was 99.9% white until after the war. And people were asking, they were saying, why are we doing the same as America and importing these people that are very different to us when we can see that what it results in is conflicts over civil rights, which is what was happening in America. At that time, they had all these riots that were down to civil rights, and the British people were saying, well, why are we doing this? What is the point in doing this? Surely we are just heaping up problems for later generations. And of course, that's exactly what has happened. And now we have this grievance that is being encouraged by the anti-racists, this grievance that black people have in Britain, that they're being kept down by whites, when the fact of the matter is that they're not, as we can see from Boris Johnson's cabinet. White people are bending over backwards to accommodate these other peoples. We are replacing ourselves on the television. We're replacing ourselves in the government, replacing ourselves in the adverts, and it's not good enough. We're being told that we have to do more. We have to decolonize absolutely everything. We have to remove white people from everything, which, as a white person, I find to be very sinister, and I think all white people should find it to be sinister. But instead, we just go along with it. We cheer it on and we say, well, isn't diversity a wonderful thing? Of particular note was an occasion when the parents of a six-year-old were warned that if their child was unable to accept that one of their fellow schoolmates was gender fluid, the child would be deemed transphobic. And we talked about that one here at the Daily Nationalist. I believe that was on the Isle of Wight. And the parents ended up having to remove the child from the school because the child had a classmate that one day was turning up as a boy and one day was turning up as a girl. And because their child could not understand that, he was told that he was transphobic. I mean, this must be so confusing for children to be told these things, and especially for the white children, when they get given all this anti-racist stuff and this decolonization stuff, and they're told that their ancestors enslaved their black classmates, and it makes them feel terrible. It makes them feel guilty just for being white, especially when they're told that whiteness itself is violent, as this black nursery school teacher is promoting here. Another example which raised the ire of parents was when a school in England banned all meat from being served as part of its school lunches, arguing that this was an attempt to limit the school's environmental impact. And I think we also have meat that is all halal in the schools, meat that has all been offered up to a foreign god, basically, which goes against Christian ideology. But I guess their argument for that is, well, if you're a Christian, there isn't any restrictions on what meat you're allowed to eat. So we just make it so that the meat is all halal and it's all okay for Muslims to eat. So once again, it's Christians or white people that take a back seat as far as the legislation is concerned. With response to this banning meat, they said, we made our school lunches meat-free to demonstrate how each of us is making a small change to our daily habits and how that can have a much wider positive impact, and that reducing meat consumption is just one way to do this. And that's what the principal of the climate-obsessed institution said, while also requesting that parents refrain from giving their children meat should they opt to provide their kids with a packed lunch. Now, children need to eat meat in order to get enough nutrients and vitamins in order to grow. I mean, it's a form of child abuse just to give children vegan food or vegetarian food. One thing they need that you're not going to be able to get from vegetables is vitamin K2. You need vitamin K2 to put the calcium into your bones. And it is only found in animals animals that eat grass, basically. They need to process that grass in the animal's liver and in the animal's digestive system so that it can produce this vitamin K2, and it's only available in meat. So if children aren't eating meat, then they're going to end up with weak bones. And that's just one instance. And all you have to really do is look at the way that the human body is and look at the shape of the teeth and the incisors that we have at the front of our mouth to know that we are supposed to eat meat, and our digestive system is set up to eat meat. It's not really possible to eat enough fruit and vegetables to compensate for that. And all the fruit and vegetables now don't have anywhere near the nutrients that they used to have. We used to have to eat an apple a day, and then it was three portions of fruit and vegetables, then it was five, and now I believe it's up to eight portions of fruit and vegetables that you have to eat every day just to get the same nutrition that you used to get from one apple. Well, I want to look at another instance here of what's going on with our children's education. And this is a little bit older than the nursery school age now. Academics who specialise in medieval history have become embroiled in a racism row over the alleged focus on whiteness within Anglo-Saxon history. Imagine that. They're now complaining that Anglo-Saxon history is too white. Anglo-Saxons are white. There certainly weren't any black Africans or Indians in Britain at the time of the Anglo-Saxons. It's just a part of British history. And when you look at the Anglo-Saxons, you have to understand that they are white. And isn't that what the WASP used to stand for? White Anglo-Saxon Protestant. They were the people that built America. The WASPs, basically. And yet now, apparently, we're not allowed to talk about that because it implies that the people there were white. Historians are reportedly fighting over the supposedly problematic focus on white people within the Anglo-Saxon medieval period, with one prominent academic accusing fellow progressive-leaning authors of writing a book that weaponizes whiteness. I mean, how are you going to decolonize medieval Europe? I mean, you can't decolonize it. It's full of white people. So what they will end up doing, I should imagine, is just banning the study of Anglo-Saxon history altogether. Critical race theory-linked rows have reportedly become frequent within the study of medieval history, with there even being an attempt to cancel the term Anglo-Saxon within the discipline over accusations that white supremacists use the term. Well, white supremacists also breathe air. They also drink water. Should we be banning oxygen and water now as well? And this is an argument that gets used so many times. There will be some terrorist that goes and carries out an atrocity, and because the terrorist uses certain terminology, they will then say anybody that uses that terminology supports what the terrorist did, which is just absolute nonsense. I'm sure the people writing about Anglo-Saxon history aren't doing so because they're white supremacists. I'm sure they're doing it because they're fascinated by Anglo-Saxon history. And it might well be because they're descended from Anglo-Saxons themselves. And of course, you're going to find your own history more interesting than other people's history. And this is why nationalists are interested in the Anglo-Saxons, because it's just very European, isn't it? It's very masculine when you look at the gods that the Nordics had, and you look at their activities and the Vikings and the raping and the pillaging. I mean, it just is very, very masculine, and it appeals to traditionalist minded folk. But that's not to say that the historians are going to be studying it because of that. They're studying it just because they're interested in history. Such controversy has once again reared its head, according to a report by The Times, after a particularly militant left-wing academic, University of Toronto-based academic Mary Rambaran-Ollam, accused former colleague Matthew Gabriel of helping to write a book which she has deemed problematic due to its focus on white people and the use of whiteness. And what is the title of this book? Well, it is titled The Bright Ages, A New History of Medieval Europe. So she's complaining that a book about medieval Europe focuses on white people. She says that the book weaponizes whiteness as an unquestionable authority, wholly lacking in meticulousness and attention to detail demanded from marginalized scholars and or women. That's taken from a review of the work titled Sounds About White. So she's claiming that white people are claiming to be an unquestionable authority on medieval Europe. Well, who else is going to be an authority on medieval Europe? Where were the black Africans in medieval Europe? Where were the sub-Saharan Africans? Well, they were below the Sahara, weren't they? They weren't actually able to get outside of the Sahara, so they don't really have anything to do with medieval Europe. Her criticism reportedly sparked a spate of online attacks against Gabriel, as well as his co-author David M. Perry, with the pair reportedly being told that they had failed as allies. So they've failed as black allies because they've written a book about their own history. I guess they should have concentrated on writing a book about medieval African history and not actually talked about things that are going to be interesting to their people group, but just talked about things that are going to be interesting to the other people group. And this is another issue that I have with all of this. These minorities will complain that white people are concentrating on talking about white people and expecting us to be talking about them or designing things which are going to suit them. Why don't they design things for themselves? It's like when they complain that medical devices only work on white people. Well, if the medical devices only work on white people, why don't you design a medical device that works on black people? Why is it that white people are expected to design things that are one size fits all for everybody? If we design something and it works and it happens to work for white people, I'm sure we will then try to make it so that it works for blacks and non-whites. But why don't they try developing these things for themselves instead of complaining that we haven't done that for them? I mean, that's what's going on here. This woman is complaining that these historians wrote a book about white history instead of writing about black history, basically. Gabrielle appears to have bowed to at least some of the criticism, issuing an apology, which reportedly condemned all racist, sexist, or otherwise bigoted attacks of any kind and for any reason. While the editor of one academic publication that declined to publish Ranbaran Olam's review has since deleted her Twitter account after issuing a public apology. And of course, well, yeah, you do condemn bigoted attacks or racist or sexist or whatever. Nobody should be attacking anyone. But I suspect what was going on here is that this woman was being criticized for what she had said. And then she was claiming that because she happens to be non-white, that the criticism was therefore because she was non-white. Or perhaps because she was a woman, therefore the criticism is because she's a woman, it's misogyny, all the rest of it. Again, this is what happens when you have these victims in society, these designated victims that have a higher status than anybody else. One academic said the row was an example of the mutual firing squad among people on the radical left, with another quipping that it could be summarized as the revolution eats its own. So what they're implying there is that these authors were left-wing anyway. They're writing a history about medieval Europe, and they haven't been left-wing enough, they haven't been anti-white enough, so they're then being criticized for not being good enough allies. It is not the first time that Ranbaran Olam has caused chaos within the medieval history field, with the academic pushing for the term Anglo-Saxon to be abandoned entirely by scholars in 2019, arguing that its use by so-called white supremacists justified its elimination. Well, what about the word white? Should we eliminate the word white as well? Because that also gets used. She said, generally white supremacists use the term to make some sort of connection to their heritage, which is inaccurate, or to make associations with whiteness, but they also habitually misuse it to try and connect themselves to a warrior past, she claimed, adding that the term gives aid and comfort to contemporary white supremacists. So she's saying that white people don't actually have an Anglo-Saxon heritage and that white people don't actually have a warrior past. Well, who is she to be telling us what our history is. What were her ancestors doing at the time of the Anglo-Saxons? While some academics, including those at the former International Society of Anglo-Saxonists, who have now changed their name to the International Society for the Study of Early Medieval England as a result of woke campaigning, have embraced Rambaran Ollam's war on the term. Others have expressed dismay over her suggestion that the term Anglo-Saxon should be axed, with one describing it as being as mad as a bag of ferrets. I mean, what else are they going to call it? It's not exactly accurate, because we had Angles, we had Saxons, we had Jutes, and they were all there in the south of the country, and we also had the Welsh, the Britons, we also had Danes, and we all came together to be known as English and referred to as Anglo-Saxon, basically. But it's not strictly accurate. But that's not the reason why she's saying we shouldn't use the term. She's saying we shouldn't use the term because white people like using it, because it singles out white people, I guess, because Anglo-Saxon doesn't include non-whites. But if you're talking about black Africans, that doesn't include white people, does it? We do have these different people groups, and if you're going to be concentrating on a part of history, then it's going to be concentrating on one people group. You can't actually tell history from the point of view of more than one people group. That's why it's called his story. It's not called their story, it's called his story. The term Anglo-Saxon is inextricably bound up with the claim by Alfred to rule as Rex Anglo-Saxonum. His use of Bede to back project a shared Anglian-Saxon identity and the emergence of history, historian Tom Holland said regarding the term. Scholars of medieval history must be free to use it. And Alfred the Great was a wonderful king. We did a Greatest Britons episode on Alfred the Great, and he did help to unite the English, basically, under the term of being English. So he was saying there that he's the king of the Angles and the Saxons, and he also became the king of the Jutes, and then later on we had the Prince of Wales, the King of England, took over the royal line from Wales, and also eventually from Scotland. But all these people get referred to as Anglo-Saxon. By the time we went to America, that's what we were known as, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. And then you also had Catholics, and you also had Jews. And this is where Dr. E. Michael Jones gets his ideas from, that there were those three ethnicities in America originally, just white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, Catholic, and Jew. Because ethnicity can be based on religion as well as based on ancestry. But what's going on here is trying to deprive white people of their history, trying to deprive us of using well-known terms that we know what they mean because they are exclusively white. That's what the issue is here, because Anglo-Saxon is an exclusively white word. You couldn't refer to a black African as an Anglo-Saxon. That's what they have the issue with here. They're basically trying to take our identity away. It's on the same level as that first story where they're trying to tell children that whiteness is violence and the fact that they're white is an evil thing. And then you go on from that to telling adults that we're not allowed to have any exclusive history. We're not allowed to be studying our medieval history because we didn't have diversity back then. So we're not allowed to study it. And all of this is attempts to try and keep this unnatural situation going, this unnatural situation of multiculturalism, where you have different people groups within one area and trying to force everybody to get along. That's why we have all these laws. That's why we have all these attempts to rewrite history. It's like trying to fit a square puzzle piece into a round puzzle box. It just doesn't go. The simple solution to all of this is just to put an end to multiculturalism. Encourage people to be proud of who they are, encourage people to identify with their ethnicity and to work for the betterment of their group. That doesn't mean that you hate the other groups. It means that you want the other groups to be as best as they can be so that they can provide good competition for your group. And if you have good, healthy competition, then everybody's living standards are going to get raised and everybody is going to have a much happier life, aren't they? Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.